So, Mr. Linnell, this is Mr. Plansbrook here. Does it bother you guys? This is a question from Kimber's site. Does it bother you guys when your fans interpret the songs incorrectly or read more into them than what's really there?
Well, I'll tell you what is really weird. Oh, is this working? I don't hear my voice the way I hear your voice. Can you hear me? Oh, how interesting, because I was hearing your voice on this delay, and it was reminding me of that Science Museum thing where you're trying to talk while you're hearing your own voice on a delay, and it drives you insane. Anyway, for those of you who are wondering, John and I are listening to our own voices on a delay, and it's really freaky. I'm sorry, John. What was the question you just said? What was the question you just asked me?
Does it bug you when people interpret your songs in a weird way?
Well, it doesn't bug me when they interpret it in a weird way. But it really depends on the specific weird thing. I think that, generally, and I'm sure you would agree with me on this, John, we write songs that have a certain kind of wiggle room as far as the interpretation of them. Some of them, they really are open to a range of interpretations. And I like the fact that people are interested enough to come up with their own interpretations and be thoughtful and we've occasionally heard interpretations that are really not at all what we were thinking of, but which are actually...
Are you on any more songs that will be included on future film soundtracks? That's from Muse KJ. Actually, this Malcolm in the Middle TV show is going to have a soundtrack that will be coming out this fall, probably on Restless Records, and it will include a full-length version of the You're Not the Boss of Me song, which we just finished, actually, a couple of weeks ago. We recorded it after many weeks of sort of trying to figure out how to turn it into a three-minute-long song. And so that's the only thing that's kind of that's the only bullet in the chamber in terms of future film soundtracks that are, like, for sure. But we're working on it. We actually met yesterday in Los Angeles with a friend from Samba Film Music, and she's hopefully going to be able to play some of our songs in some big Hollywood movies.
Quick follow-up. Actually, this isn't a follow-up. I just wanted to say a quick follow-up.
That's okay.
The question is, I just saw it. This is from Jordani. Well, it says Jordani from Jordan Cooper of Queens, New York. What do you think of Malcolm in the Middle, and about how the music is actually being used in the show?
Well, I am actually very much involved in the placement. This is Flansburg here in the placement of the songs because we actually do the score. It's not just I guess the incidental songs that you might not know are. Piece of music that They Might Be Giants have written are placed by us a lot of the time. The songs that people are familiar with that are featured at the end of the shows are actually placed by the show's creator, Linwood Boomer, and the music supervisor. And they do have some edits in them that I think we wouldn't choose. I mean, it does I think... most musicians are kind of familiar with this thing of hearing your song being used in the movie and having it be kind of slightly chopped in a way that works to serve the image of the film or the TV show, but doesn't really kind of serve the song's form that well. And so it's a little bit funny that way, but it's exciting just to hear the song used in a TV show. Definitely cool.
Another question, Mr. Linnell?
I don't have a question for you. Do you have a question for me? I've been paging through these.
Yeah, I have a question here from Zane. What inspired you to record a children's album? Well, I guess, you know, I don't actually know where the idea originally is from, but I know that it was something that was in the air for a while, and I guess maybe you know the answer to this. We got an offer from Rounder to make a children's record. I think it's something that people have proposed in the past, you know, and I feel like partly inspired by the fact that other bands that we liked have cooked up children's records, like the Cocktails, notably, did a nice children's record. Yeah, I don't know. It's really, I mean, the fact that we've gotten into it at this point, to the point where we, you know, we really have, we've recorded about probably most of the music for this record, and it's defined itself so completely now in a way that it wasn't, you know, we didn't really have a very clear definition of what we were doing when we started, but it's now such a vivid thing now that we've gotten into it. I feel like it's been a really liberating experience, you know, coming up with this music, because it's so much more wide open than obviously than the stuff we've been doing as, you know, for clients recently. So it's really been a great project. I don't know whose idea it was.
I actually was thinking that probably, I mean, besides the fact that we were making records for Elektra, and Elektra had never really been interested in doing a children's record. I mean, we were obliged to deliver all our records to Elektra, and they weren't particularly enthusiastic in that direction. Probably kept us from doing it at that time. But now, I think in part, the idea of doing a children's record after having done, you know, 7 rock albums seemed a lot more palatable. I think when we first started, we didn't really want people to be confused whether or not we were a rock band or a children's act. So it was kind of a natural thing to avoid, you know, working too many things at the same time. I think now that we're very well established as a rock act, it's much easier to deal with those issues. I can't, when I was like 28, I can't imagine feeling comfortable with the idea of people maybe mistakenly thinking we're rappy.
Yeah, I know. I think at some point you said that this would help define the difference between the stuff that we've already been doing, that parents feel comfortable playing for their kids, and something that was actually intended for kids, that we, you know, finally got the chance to say, you know, that our other albums really were for adults, you know, which I think they are. I mean, in some ways, I think that the children's record that we're making has stuff on it that will appeal to adults. You know, not, I don't think all of it will be 100% only accessible for kids. You know, I think that it's like any good quality thing for kids. It's something that grown-ups can like too. And for me, I think it's one of my favorite records we've ever made.
So we've got a question from Hooper X, Mr. Linnell. Growing up, what were your favorite toys? We need an answer right away on this one, Don.
I never got, there were a couple that were advertised when I was a kid that I remember kind of coveting. One of them was the Rock'em Sock'em Robot, which seemed like such an amazingly interesting and weird kind of toy, and I never managed to get one of those, but I did get this thing. I'm kind of forgetting the name of it, but it was something I insisted on, you know, when I was like 6 or 7, that I really wanted this thing, and what it was a kind of a little plastic oven that you put these plastic squares inside of, and they would grow into little monsters. Do you remember that thing? And then afterwards, you could put them in a little sort of like a tiny trash compactor thing. You turn the screw, and it would turn back into a little cube. And I think there was something about Strange Change in the name. It was like the Strange Change Machine or something like that. And it was I was sort of obsessed with that thing for a while.
Was this related to sort of the Mattel? There was Incredible Edibles.
Yeah. Creepy Crawlers, I think, was probably the first version of that kind of thing. So things probably they, you don't let kids play with stuff like this nowadays, but at the time, yeah, it involved like pouring plastic into molds. And of course, as a kid, you'd always end up burning this plastic just by leaving it in too long. Everyone in this room is nodding their head. I just want to say, probably they're all about our age, and everyone is nodding in recognition.
Well, the thing about the creepy, what was it called? Creepy what?
Creepy crawlers.
The creepy crawlers thing is that it involves basically giving small children hot plates, the kind of things that you boil water with when you get your first apartment, only instead, you're giving it to a 7-year-old to burn down the house with. They were incredibly dangerous, I guess. But this is also at the same time as those whammo gun, air guns that, like, basically after, 4 hours of using, you realize you actually could fill it with dirt and blind your neighbor.
Okay, John, I want to ask you a question now, and I'm looking for it right now. Let's see. Okay, go ahead.
This is a question from Mr. Linnell from Daryl, UK, who I believe is from the UK. So he's fascinated with things American, and I want to know, when do you imagine you will be working on State Songs Volume 2? What do you plan to do with the album, i.e. more band organ, or something entirely new?
I don't know. I feel like it was such a sort of a crazy departure to write music for band organs for the last one. I'm not quite sure how to top that now, but I know that Rounder is interested in doing another one. I think like maybe in something like 2 years, it would be appropriate for me to do another one. Unfortunately, it like cut into, as you, John Flansburgh, well know, it really cut into the Malcolm in the Middle work heavily just to put the record out and to promote it. Obviously I want to make They Might Be Giants my priority, but I'd love to cook up another State Songs collection, and luckily the record company is interested in that too.
Actually, for the people out there who aren't on our mailing list and don't get the info club thing, I'm sure there are people who've heard the band organ music on State Songs and would be interested in hearing just like a description of what the instrument and how you made that, those recordings, because it's kind of a crazy story.
Okay, I'd love to talk about that. I should preface this by saying that I wrote a kind of in-depth account of it for our website, and I think the name of that piece is something like We're an American Band Organ. But I will say that band organs are the machines that make music in old-fashioned merry-go-round, and they are wind-driven mechanical musical instruments that run off of paper rolls like player pianos. And so what I had to do was write the music out knowing the ranges of notes that were available for the instrument, which are very peculiar ranges. In the bass register, most of them have only 5 or 6 available notes total. So there were all these restrictions like that. And then once I'd finished the arrangement, I gave the music to these guys who were professional roll cutters, and they turned sheet music that I gave them into these punched paper rolls, which they then fed into the machines, and we set up a recording session. One was actually at the site of the merry-go-round down in Glen Echo Park in Maryland, near Washington, and I pretty much had to live with the mistakes there was almost no way to really correct a lot of the errors that went into. Some of them were just sort of balance errors. Some of them were transcription errors. And some of the mistakes I didn't make. Other people made them. But, I want to establish a plan. But I'm still really happy with the way it came out. It was a crazy experience and way more trouble than it probably was worth. But it's easy to, now just to enjoy the music.
So I want to go into the speed round because there's a million questions here, so I'm just going to read off some of them, answer them, and And if I say the wrong answer, John, just yell out the word stop. TDK says, John and John, other than your May 26th appearance on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, do you have any upcoming TV show appearances scheduled? The answer for that is no. In fact, we have between the Malcolm in the Middle show and recording this children's record, and what was the other thing? Oh, we did all the music for the Jon Stewart Daily Show. If you tune in to the Daily Show right now, you can hear all this new music that we recorded. We've been kind of on deadline for 6 months straight, and it's been very just a tremendous amount of work. So we don't have that much. We're kind of taking the summer a little bit slower than normal. We are doing a 4th of July show somewhere in Chicago, and then we're doing a 5th of July opening for the band Chicago in Utah.
So just to confuse anyone who's trying to follow along, we're playing in Chicago, but we're opening for Chicago in Utah.
And we are going to be bringing our horn section to the Chicago show, and we'll be performing a number of songs by Chicago when we open for the band Chicago. Just to spoil it for the few people left who still like the band Chicago. And I think that show for Chicago is on some, like, Air Force base and sounds like a very strange show. Hooper X says, will the two of you ever appear on Malcolm in the Middle, perhaps as yourselves? That would be really interesting. We've actually went to the set once, and it was a very Hollywood experience. I can't imagine what it would be like kind of entering that world. I spend a lot of my waking hours staring at the show as it's being assembled, and I feel really weirdly involved in that world. We just even be on the set.
I was feeling into it. Yeah, the other thing, I guess, is that it's not really up to us. We'd have to wait to be invited, but it would be a total riot. I've got a question for me. Jen Eric says, "Hey guys, are there any songs you wish you never wrote or recorded, such as how REM disowned Shiny Happy People?" Well, I also wish I had never written Shiny Happy People. So I just want to join there, chime in.
I wasn't aware that REM had disowned Shiny Happy People, but
I like that song. I don't know what's the matter with those guys.
This is a question from Bree Geek or Bree Geek, depending on how you pronounce. Now that the dummy heads are retired, are props being omitted from the shows in the future? We had a lot of props in our show, and basically right after we did our first tour of the United States, we stopped using props almost entirely. We would use some musical instruments that function like props, like big drums and stuff like that, but it seemed way too much like the Rocky Horror Picture Show to be using props for a period of time. But now that we're older and more secure in ourselves, I think we feel more comfortable with the props. We actually will probably buy another set of dummy heads, but we had to figure out something that people would be interested in, so we gave away the dummy heads. The dummy heads that we're giving away, we probably should have warned them that they're really raggedy. They're like super smashed in. I think one of them has their nose missing.
Yeah, I guess if you win the dummy head, just bear in mind that it was not damaged in shipping. It was already destroyed before it left our warehouse. Here's a question for you, John. What kind of authors or books do you enjoy reading? Are you reading anything now?
Actually, I was just reading this book by my friend Sarah Vowell called Take the Cannoli. That's a collection of her essays from the NPR radio show This American Life. And I also picked up this crazy science book called Catapults and it had a strange name. It was strange that actually it had nothing in the book about catapults in it, which is also strange. But basically, it's one of these kind of airport novelty science books.
but it's like filled with all sorts of interesting parallels between design in nature and design in, oh, it's called Cat's Paws and Catapults. And I looked in the index, and there's one entry about catapults, and there are no entries about cat's paws. But it's about the difference between design in nature and design and engineering principles. And it's actually a really fascinating book, and it's a very strange category of a book. But, you know, it's great nightstand reading. It really makes your head spin.
So John from Fuzzy, kind of a silly question, but is it weird being in a band where both of you guys have the same first name?
The answer to that is no, it's not particularly weird. If I say John, I know that I'm not referring to myself. I'm talking to the other guy. In fact, it's the only people who it's not weird for is us, probably. If somebody else is confused, I guess that's their problem.
Yes, John, I understand.
Bree Geek also asks, where do John and John expect to stand musically in the next couple of years? They don't plan on stopping anytime soon, right? And the answer to that would be right. Hooper X, what is your stance on Napster and MP3 sharing? This is a complicated question. You know, I was thinking that we should, like, figure out how to have, like, some kind of, a short form statement on this, because it's a big question.
I think it's one of those things where, right, okay. I just want to interrupt here. I think that, what the hell was I about to say? Oh, the thing about the Napster thing is it's kind of like, it reminds me of the editorial in the Times today about SUVs, to the extent that people want one thing for the culture at large and they want another thing for themselves. People are not going to decide on their own that it's immoral to steal music from their favorite band. And that's really why you have government agencies. I mean, it sounds creepy to say this, but, you know, I think that there is a reason why you have a government, and that's one of the reasons is to guard against those kinds of things where people, for example, I think there should be a speed limit, but sometimes I don't feel like obeying the speed limit personally. I just think other people should obey the speed limit. So, I mean, all told, I'm in favor of cops, like, stopping people who are driving like maniacs, you know, and it makes me sad when they do it to me. But I'm glad that they're doing it, you know, to other people. So I guess that's sort of how I feel about this pirating of music. You know, speaking as an artist, I think that it really needs to be regulated.
I think they should put those people in jail. But that said, we do want to make everyone, I mean, I guess everybody on this thing is probably pretty aware that we're doing this MP3 giveaway thing pretty much every week through eMusic. So if you sign up your name at tmeg.com or even your friend's name, you can receive free stuff from us pretty much all the time. You just are not allowed to share it with your friends, and those are the rules. We don't want people trading our stuff. We really hope you respect our ability to, you know, market our music in the way that we choose to do it. I think one of the unfortunate things about the Metallica getting involved in the debate is that they're such a successful band that it's very hard for people to understand that there are singers and songwriters who live much more earthbound lives and actually rely on their music to pay their rents, and we are one of those bands. And we want to remind everyone that we really appreciate it when you buy our music. There are a lot of sites out there where you can basically get all the music we've ever made for free, and that might seem really exciting and cool, but to us, it's actually sort of a living nightmare. So please feel free to, you know, buy our records early and often. We really appreciate it.
Here's a question, a bunch of questions actually from this guy, Rat Trap TM. Well, I'm going to ask you the second two of them. Who was your favorite teacher, and what are your favorite restaurants?
My favorite teacher, you know, that's an interesting question. You know, I had a couple of teachers in high school that were pretty inspiring. I mean, I remember, what's his name? Mr. Gerber. Remember Mr. Gerber?
I never had him, but John and I actually attended the same high school in Sudbury, Massachusetts, and there were a lot of really wacky teachers all collected together in this one place. And I never had Gerber, but I heard he was a good one.
Yeah, he was, you know, I mean, he was a very inspired and unorthodox teacher. He was very passionate, and I think, you know, my adolescent mind, he was very exciting. One thing I realized as I've gotten older is that, you know, when you're 15 or 14 years old, it's really hard to tell if somebody's 22 or 40, and a lot of our teachers at that time were so much younger than I realized. Like, they were really just barely out of college, but they were very enthusiastic and had a lot of nice, you know, very interesting points of view, and they were just very supportive of all the, you know, crazy ideas that we had. They were very, very cool. Mr. Platt. And it was just a cool
time. Yeah, of course, John and I were in school, you know, in grammar school in the 70s, and education was way more liberal, it seems like, at that time. So we had people who were really, really trying out a lot of crazy experiments in school, and it was fun. I mean, I'm not saying it was necessarily the best possible way to educate kids. I think we sort of got shortchanged in, like, certain departments, but it was an interesting time. I had this teacher named Gary Bean that I liked a lot, who was, you know, busily protesting the war in Vietnam and getting arrested for it. Restaurants, and I want to say, I at the risk of having more people go there and making it harder for me to get in, I really like Katz's Delicatessen on Houston Street in Manhattan, among other places.
I would have to agree with you on the Katz's vote. It's on Ludlow Street and what is it, Houston? Definitely worth the trip. And then back to the speed round of questions. John, now that you've recorded the full-length version of Boss of Me, will it start getting radio airplay a la the Friends full-length theme song back in 1995? And the answer to that question, of course, is yes. It is going to be a huge top 40 hit in the very near future. Stephanie, too, says, Flansburg, what is the significance of the price tag hanging from one of your guitars that I saw you playing at a couple of your shows? Is there special meaning behind that? And I'm trying to think of a country singer who had a price tag hanging from her hat.
That would be Minnie Pearl, John.
Yeah, it's basically kind of a Minnie Pearl thing. I don't know. Part of it is that, you know, when you go into guitar shops, there's always nice guitars that you wish you had, that you wish you could own, that have price tags hanging off. An idea to leave the price tag on. But it is no other significance than that. River Poet says, my question, being such a web-friendly band and distributing MP3s more than most bands do, what do you guys think about the lawsuit against, we talked about this already, Napster and the fight being led by Metallica, don't you think that sharing MP3s increases your exposure and builds an even stronger following? The answer would be yes and no.
Here's one from Steph. Steph 2, what is your favorite boy band? And why? What do you guys think of the whole boy band phenomenon? I know that you have some opinions about this, John. That's why I'm asking you this one.
I have some very strong opinions about the boy bands. I believe that NSYNC is better than the rest, and I think they all stink. Jish asks, at this point, when do you expect the next studio album to be released? Well, we have this Knock on the Middle studio album that will be coming out in the fall, and the children's album as well, and I think the children's album actually will be both of them will be of interest to our fans, but I think actually, in many ways, the children's album is kind of remarkably in the spirit
of a regular They Might Be Giants album, I think people will dig it. I mean, it's definitely different, but it's also, there's actually something very liberated about it. It's kind of cool. Ramzo asks, is this the first interview conducted with you guys in which the interviewer, as far as I know, the interviewees, are in their underpants? Well, we cannot confirm that the interviewees are in their underpants. We are waiting for another computer application to figure that out. A collaboration between me and a guy named Hal Cragen, who's actually living in Los Angeles now, so it's harder for us to do shows because it's just not really economically feasible. But I love playing with Hal, and you know, it's kind of ethereal that we could draw on, and we could really do a full-length show, and it's no problem. But hopefully we'll do something soon. Bentley says, hello, I have a question for Tammy Chi. What moves you to record a second version of James K. Polk for Factory Showroom? And what's the deal with the singing saw?
Well, so, no. I guess the original version had a kind of an 80s sound to it, being a sort of drum machine-y thing. And we thought it would be nice to include the whole band when we did our Factory Showroom version. So we have, originally I think we were trying to do like sort of an acoustic-y, but and then we waited until the last minute to put the solo part in. Originally I think we had a sort of synth whistle or something by Julian Coster, who played a wonderful singing saw solo in the middle. John, I have a question for you from Q-O-T-I-L-E, Quotile. Not sure how to pronounce it. If you were only allowed to play one song in a set, but that song had to be extended for 60 minutes, what song would you choose and why?
That would have to be some kind of medley incorporating all the regular songs of our show. I don't know. That's an insane question. We do a really long version of the guitar. I suppose we could actually do kind of an endless version of Spy, which is a conducted improvisation, but I don't know.
I was thinking, you know, Red and White Blue Suede Shoes or one of those. How did you get the Malcolm gig? Do you want to tell that story?
Basically the creator of the show called up our office and asked if we were interested. This guy, Linwood Boomer, who for television trivia buffs would be probably interested to know that he was one of the stars of Little House on the Prairie. He was married to the blind girl, or the deaf girl, actress playing a blind or deaf person, Linwood, her husband, and they were kind of the ideal, dreamy couple that a lot of pre-adolescent girls kind of wanted to be like. And now he's worked on The Cosby Show, and he's worked on a bunch of other really successful, I guess he worked on Third Rock from the Sun, and he was a long-standing Giants fan, and one incorporate our music into the show, and he called us up to ask if we wanted to do the theme, and we had to take up the task of doing it, and the song itself was something that I've been working on previously, so it wasn't actually, but it didn't sort of fit the energy of the show, since it was kind of, the Malcolm in the Middle show is all about this family of boys, so it seemed like it had the right vibe. Here's a question from The Hanged Man. What songs will be on the next album? Do you plan on putting the new Working Undercover for the Man EP tracks on the new album? Will they be re-recorded mixed before doing so?
Well, I guess the answer is we haven't really figured it out, but we have a lot of new material now. So we're feeling like, we've got most of our ducks in a row for this next They Might Be Giants record. We just have to playing a lot of new songs, really, for the last year and a half now. I think we've been playing a lot of unreleased new material in our live show that wouldn't qualify. We also have She Thinks She's Edith Head, is another new song. A song called Cyclops Rock. We've got a song called It's So. There's a lot of other. These are kind of more singly songs. There's a lot of other more sort of album track type of stuff. We're really looking forward to this next record.
So here's a question from Particle Man. What is your biggest, and that's in capital letters for those who can't see my voice, what is your biggest musical influence? Kind of an odd question in some ways, but what do you think, Lono?
Well, you said musical, right? Musical influence. I guess, you know, there's one really obvious stock answer that we usually pull out. I mean, I think when the influence question comes up, we try to keep everyone guessing by making up a different answer every time. But probably the most true and common answer is that we both really liked the Beatles when we were kids. My family always sang Beatles songs when we were on car trips. You know, everybody would sing Beatles songs, and that, you know, that just seemed like the very foundation of music for the people in. And I, you know, I feel like the people in my generation, although I've spoken to people who did not have that experience, were not, you know, they were the same age as us and didn't feel like they were the band to end all bands. But to me, they kind of always will.
Let's see. Where are we going here? One of my favorite TV, this is from Ben. I don't know if Bentley is a car, but this is a question. One of my favorite TMDG songs is
the song that's from the viewpoint of the car. Thank you for asking. Yeah, it's about a car. There's part of it which is about a car. I don't know how much farther I can go into it. You know, it's a pretty oblique lyric, but there's a part of it which is a question. You know, it's I feel like a little bit because it's kind of about people having, you know, sort of catastrophic experience with one another, and it, that relates to cars smashing into each other in the song. So that's, you know, I mean, and obviously I didn't make the idea up. Somebody else thought of it, and that person was J.G. Ballard. Here's a song for Flansburgh, and it's to Mr. Flansburgh. What's on the horizon for Monopuff? Any new records or singles in the making, or has the project sort of been put on hold?
The project has sort of been put on hold, but, you know, we've been doing so much work. I feel like we've been chained to our work sessions, doing all these various things.
Can stay on when this webcast happens in just a, when's it happening? How many minutes from now, Jim?
How many minutes? It's 5:37.
It's 5:37 here on the West Coast. We're in outside of San Francisco.
In 23 minutes,
the webcast. Goes up, and you can.
You can instant message while to each other.
Yeah. You guys can basically instant message to each other talking about the webcast of the Bowery Ballroom Show of April 21st. Tell us about how you felt using the Cahoots application, because we're pretty much going to try to use it again sometime with you guys. We'll go from there.
So, yeah, but I'm curious what the webcast looks like. I haven't seen any of it. It's going to be cool. Francois Mitterrand, who is online now and very up to date with things online, says to TMG, did you catch the recent Williamsburg Brooklyn Film Festival? If so, what did you think?
You know, I saw that WNYC in New York is the NPR station. It's fun promoting it.
They're the sponsors of this thing. It's
turning into like an extension of the NYU dorm system right now, but it for a long time was this very artsy little community,
And I was kind of amazed that there was a film festival. I didn't get to see it, but I'm excited by the idea of it. But here, John, I've got a question from Rabid Child. Okay, here's one. First, Tiny Toons back in the 90s. Now a kid's album means to regularly renew your fan base by snaring each generation in its childhood.
Well, we never thought that that would, I mean, I think if we thought that that would work, we would have been crazy. But in fact, we wouldn't have been crazy because we have people, teenagers and older people who come to our shows whose first encounter with us was on Tiny Toons, and it's you know, it's like some insane marketing scheme that you'd come up with. First of all, I don't think we really had a clear picture of the longevity of the band that we were in when we started out. You know, John and I didn't really have this kind of like you know, Truman Show style like long-term plan for the MLB Giants, where we knew that we could like educate children and then reap them later on, you know. But it worked out that way. So yeah, I guess, you know, we'll maybe we've learned from that, and that's part of the reason why we've got a children's record. But that's actually not true. I think we want, because children are people too.
Let's see. Let's answer these questions as quickly as possible. Hi, I went to the 414 DC show, and I believe it was Linnell who sang Finish With Lies and Flansburgh who sang Working Undercover. I've listened to the recorded version. Is it still Linnell singing Finish With Lies and Flans on Working Undercover? The answer is yes. Astro PHX, guys, I love the websites that you have, especially the Dial-A-Song. I'd like to know how those songs have been recorded. Are these typically recorded in a home studio on a regular basis, or do you go into a pro studio for a weekend and crank out a load of them? Are they recorded live, or do you separate the tracks? Is this the usual place where CDs are created? We do a bunch, sort of a combination of all those things, actually. We actually record a lot of the Malcolm stuff, some of which is featured on the Dial-A Song, at a studio in Williamsburg called Coyote Studios. And it's a very nice recording studio. It's not a very super fancy studio. It's actually kind of more of a rock and roll place, which makes it very affordable to be used constantly, because we can't really make the Malcolm. Of course, a lot of the stuff is recorded at our home studios, where we have digital recorders and do stuff with like drum machines and stuff like that. River Poet says, this question is for my 3-year-old daughter, Maddie Rose. She said to ask them if they did a Michi show with Mommy and Daddy. I guess previously she's gone to the shows without her parents. John, are we going to be able to play Dinner Bell, or will you spoil the event for the 3-year-old Maddie Rose?
I'm ready to play it, John, if you are. I think we just have to send the cassette type to the band now. We haven't ever played that song with the current They Might Be Giants orchestra, so we'd have to have a special rehearsal for that. But you know, let's do it. I say, you know, let's rise to the occasion. Let's not let Maddie down. I'm ready.
I'm ready to commit myself to Maddie. We'll be performing Dinner Bell at the Celebrate Brooklyn Festival on 8/19. Come and see They Might Be Giants performing. Zala Ando for John. John, are there any songs you guys wrote that you'd be happy never to hear again? Yes, but I can't remember what those would be. I don't know. I like playing a lot of songs that we've played way too much. Like, for instance, Filling Start, I actually never think I would need to play it again, but it's actually surprisingly fun to play. I'm trying to think, are there any songs
that
we've never
played? I think that, you know, in fact, there are songs which, for example, there's songs that I've written that I feel a little embarrassed about because I wrote them when I was 23. And I'm just guessing here. Are you, Scratch says, are you aware that you have been announced as recording Ram On for a Paul McCartney tribute album?
a few of the other bands allegedly slated.
Actually, have on my things to do list on my computer is to record a version of Ramon, and it's a very cool song, and I'm looking forward to figuring out how to do an arrangement that won't just be like a blatant ripoff of the really killer original version of Ramon by Paul McCartney. And you know, actually, if anybody knows any more information about bands that have dropped out, because we definitely were tantalized by the roster of artists involved, and maybe so we're not familiar with the. It's a charity record, but it's a charity that we're not. We've never worked with before. Con Job, please, people, bring us up to speed. Keith N. says, what is John Linnell's favorite to play live, and what is Plans' favorite?
Well, I have a sort of simple answer, which is, I mean, as John said, there are a lot of songs we play over and over again that are playing, which is the song that, you know, alone for a number of years and then pick up and play again. Of course, that song is a different song every time, but that's always really fun. I also always enjoy playing Spy because that's completely unpredictable and different every single show and can be totally hilarious or a complete glazed over zombie fest. And we never know until we get into it. So it's an exciting song. I mean, those can be some of our worst performances as well, I think. But that's what makes it, live.
Hey, I wish we had somehow collected all the Spy improvisations. It would make it really unique to just line up all those files. Step two, you guys recently did two shows with M. Doty from Soul Coughing. R.I.P. Any touring plans with him or any other opening acts? Actually, Doty will be opening for us at that August show in Brooklyn, the Celebrate Brooklyn show. And we want to tell everybody that show is totally free, outdoor event, and it's basically like a big rock festival kind of thing. And if we can figure out how to do it, we might redo the big band show that we did recently at Bowery. And kind of a great vibe to have the big. We did a show with 8 horn players, and it's kind of an alternate version of our show. And hopefully, if we can orchestrate it, we could do that for that show. But it is definitely worth coming to New York and just hanging out with your New York friends. So we want to encourage people. I've got the real information here. The 19th says Jim Stabile. Jimmy the Face says, hey, John, you two are undoubtedly the biggest supporters of online distribution of Ender Concerned. What is your feeling of Napster? We've done that already. Are you guys into wrestling at all? If so, what are your favorite wrestlers? Well, you know, I was into Goldberg, but now I realize The Rock is the best. Carb the 9, Jurette 64, why a children's album? I think we've gotten to that. TMBG182 says, to Flans, what are your favorite guitars to play? And I know you use the red ESP35 Type 1 and the gold Gibson and the Dano guitar Mando. What others do you like to play? I've got a crummy Telecaster that I bought new that looks like it's been run over by a car that I like to play, but the ones I like to play, I play in the shows. I'm not the guitarist hiding in the house.
SF Carl says, I'm sorry, were you done talking about SF Carl, will you do any cover songs in the near future? We haven't even learned this yet, but we started talking about doing a cover of the Rockford Files theme. I think that's probably the next cover that we're going to try and put together.
I should mention that last night we actually received an award from BMI for the Malcolm in the Middle soundtrack, and Mike Post is the composer of the Rockford Files, and I actually told him that we were talking about doing a cover of the Rockford Fox theme, and he was sort of, so, and so the very last thing he said to me, sort of preened across the room, which was, do it in G. I assume the original version must be in G, but I don't know what it means to him, it would be in G.
Don't make the mistakes so many others have.
The Rockford File theme does not sound as good in other keys. So, Alpaca 2500 says, for limited.
I like bass clarinet too, as a matter of fact, and I wish, in some ways, I wish that it were a more versatile instrument because I'd love to be able to play it more often. Unfortunately, I can't sing and play it at the same time, and it's a hard. I own a bass saxophone that is impossible to play in tune, and I'm planning on getting a better one sometimes as I get money together. So that'll be. John, what is your favorite instrument to play? Just to turn that around.
Well, I like playing the guitar, but that just seems like such an uncreative answer. You know, I really enjoy singing. I like singing and playing the guitar kind of as a combination, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but I find that just that is a very a fun. I mean, that's something that I do all the time just for fun, and it's really a nice combination of things. I've got a question here from Hooper X. Is the new album going to be called Unreliable Narrator, or is that just a joke?
Well, I think it's an interesting name. So there are times when we come up with a funny idea, and then it turns into a real thing. That's happened more than once. I just want to completely change the subject here. It's a award show, and the woman who, and I unfortunately I don't know her name, but she played in movie Titanic was on the plane with us, and it occurred to both John and I that the plane was not couldn't possibly crash under the circumstances. Have a more spectacular obituary next to another person that people have heard of.
I think that would make us the big bopper, John. Oh, back on the unreliable narrator that it means.
And I was sort of thinking that maybe it would be a good title because it kind of explains a lot of our songs, which are basically character songs or songs written from a more extreme point of view than we might actually have just to make it an interesting song. And so in a way, it seemed like what's cool about it is it's kind of like it's a way of saying character song. But unfortunately, I've come to realize that nobody knows what the term unreliable narrator means. It's actually like a literary term. It's like something that like it's like a writing class they would talk about, a fiction writing term. But Quagmire says, for Linnell, how do you decide to write your music? Is there a mathematical reasoning behind it? Because the chord progressions you've made are amazingly pleasing. My ears for whatever reason. Can you comment on this?
Well, I wish there were some like math formula. I mean, I like, and it often seems like it's easier to write music for me than it is to write lyrics. And I've noticed not when I'm working on so I don't know if that's what's pleasing, but that's some ways it's how I get from one place to another and the chord changes.
Any ideas on what Little will be releasing your stuff? We're probably making a record with Restless, that's the Malcolm in the Middle record, and of course Rounder, the home of Rafi, is putting out our children's record. Linnell, my favorite song is What Is Everyone Staring At? Is that going to be released in some way?
I think that song probably needs to go up on the blocks, and we need to get underneath it, rip out the muffler and, you know, do you know, is sort of in the shop getting ready, and will be, there's a huge silver balloon hovering outside the door here.
So Linnell, I need some
No.
TDK.
I've never seen him naked either, which is really weird because I've never seen John naked, even though we've spent about 25 years playing in bands and sharing dressing rooms.
So you blacked that whole thing out.
Blacked what whole thing out?
Okay. TDK says, I'm almost positive that the webcast is from the 27th, not the 21st. And TDK, you are correct. Bree Geek says, do you plan to run for president because you realize so many people would vote for you?
Oh, that was for me. I'm sorry. No.
Bree Geek, when you guys started out, and as you say, you worked on each other's demos before becoming a band, what were the demos for? Were you headed in other musical directions?
No, I think that we were headed in this musical direction, whether we thought that was going to happen or not.
Oh, I think the person thinks that the demos were like some kind of demos for like other people rather than demos for yourself. So, yeah, I mean, basically when we make demos, we're just kind of, it's a nice thing, we're not making records. Ink on Paper, could you please ask them what they thought of the fan tribute album? It might be Giants too. It will make me very happy. You know, I have a copy of this record in the trunk of our car for a really long time, and I still have it. I feel very guilty for not having listened to it. It looks really interesting. It's got, like, one of the things that it looks fascinating about it is it's got a really cool song selection. It's a very unusual set of songs. And
I could comment on that. I actually particularly like these cover versions of our songs, but for me it was obviously like fascinating and strange to hear someone else's versions of our songs.
Perfect Spelling says, weighing the various pros and cons, if you could choose to possess exactly the amount of fame that you desire, how far would you take it? Well, that's a hard question to answer. I think the problem with fame is that there's no exact amount that you get. You know, it's a very uneven notion. In some ways, I think we're about exactly as famous as we choose to be. And in other ways, I would prefer to be a million times more famous, and in other ways I'd prefer to be totally unknown. It really depends on what the situation is at any given moment.
Village or something, what particularly you're known.
Here's a question for me from Cade. Hey guys, tell me about Spacesuit. That song gives me the chills. It's incredible. That song, Spacesuit, was actually written a long time ago. I was for a brief period I took guitar lessons with a guitar instructor named Jack DeSalvo in Manhattan, and
the lyrics roughly, I mean, what I was sort of trying to get across is in the second verse that's in Spanish, I wish I was a better singer, I wish I was a better songer.
Okay, Smirk Co. says, well now, do you really play the bass on the guitar? I see you in the video, but I didn't know you played.
That's actually not the perverse tricksters of They Might Be Giants that we are. We shot the video with me playing bass. I can't remember.
Shannon says, what was the first rock concert? And I thought John Linnell.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't even remember what the first concert I went to, but that was one of the first ones, yeah. I think John and I were probably 13 and 14 or something like that, and we saw Frank Zappa at the Orpheum Theater in Boston.
I've been told that we have to wrap it up. We want to make everyone aware that the webcast is going on online in just a few minutes.
What do they have to do to get there, Jim?
Well,
oh, I read this.
So they need to go up to the top of the client.
Go up to the top of the Kahoot's client, where it says currently visiting TMBG Live Voicecast. Click over to go to site text conversation. Click on that.
In other words, you've got to click on the TMBG Live Voicecast thing to open up the little sidebar menu.
Little daughter window.
The daughter window as Jim, who works in the industry known as click on the open up that little window on TMBG Live Voicecast and go to site
text conversation
and
listen to our voices. But we are going to be actually going online testing a busy hall of mirrors that is our lives. And Jim also wants to remind us
well,
that
here's where it's gonna be hooked.
this is where to go directly. Everybody, grab a pencil, write it down. www.rollingstone.com/sections/special/TMBG,
which is where the webcast is being hosted.
So if you go to that page, you'll see John and John. Stay with your Kahoot's text conversation link, and you can instant message John and John. And we'll continue this while you guys watch the webcast and listen to it.
Okay. So, and how long is that? How long is the webcast actually going to be posted beyond that?
It'll be available on demand for the next probably month or so for you guys to check out.
Okay. And we also want to remind everybody that you know, along with the Kahoot thing that you downloaded for free, you can also get the unreliable narrator on the substitute song right here for Kahoot as an MP3 file, and that's available only here. So that address, onerollingstone.com/sections/special/TMBG. We hope everyone can grab that. We are going to go over to the typewriters now. Jared, our sweaty face, is performing live at the Bowery Ballroom on last month at the special lighting show.
Anything else? We just want to thank everybody here for having us and like whispering behind us
right
now.
Thanks for having us here. And thanks to everybody for listening to our garbled and mangled speech. Hope it was actually in truth clear and crystal clear, and I hope we said stuff that made sense in addition.
Oh, and the people from Kahoot's want to remind for you of that, you know, I mean, be nice, but, you know, like, this is obviously new technology, and they'd just be very curious to get some practical feedback about how it worked out. And just once again, that address is www.rollingstone.com/sections/special/TMBG for the live streaming of the show.
And one more.
If you guys come to Brooklyn, we'd love to host. Just bring our gear, you know. Oh, send your comments to Kahoot's. Did you have a nice time? Do you feel cheated? Are you angry? You know, whatever. Let them know.
All right, and to all the people out there, thank you so much for being part of this. We really appreciate your interest.
See y'all later.